Welcome indeed to, yes, hour number two of the Mark Moses Show. Let's go to Orlando and talk to this fine gentleman. He does a great job with the Orlando Sentinel covering UCF athletics. Matt, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. I was reading your article here a second ago. UCF gets their first ever Big 12 conference tournament win against Oklahoma State. Double-digit win. How'd they get it done today?
Yeah, you know, really it came down to defense, which is what they've been doing all season long. You know, they started out the second half. They went on an 18-1 run to really kind of cruise, take control of the game and cruise past Oklahoma State. They turned a four-point halftime lead into a double-digit, you know, advantage, and then they just cruised the second half of the way. And, you know, Ibrahima Diallo was the guy of the day, you know, had the seven-footer, had 17 points, career-high performance, 11 rebounds. UCF out-rebounded the Cowboys. They shot 48% in the second half. Really were able to put them away, and, you know, they move on to the second round, and they place BYU tomorrow at 12:30. So another midday game for the Knights and a chance to try possibly move farther into the Big 12 tournament.
I know you're right about this. So they played BYU twice, lost both of them. First one, lose by five, then lose by two. Does that give you hope for this third time coming up tomorrow?
Well, you'd think so. You know, that's something that Johnny Dawkins has talked about is, you know, when you play teams over and over again, you know, you get kind of an idea of what to expect from them, and they should be able to go in there and hopefully have an opportunity to come at them. You know, the only thing that's a disadvantage for UCF is, you know, they played the first round today. You know, BYU got a bye, in a sense. They got to kind of rest an extra day. So UCF is going to come in here pretty much, you know, after it was a game under its belt. Which could also help them. You know, I mean, they get a chance to, they've already kind of had their big debut, and now they go out there and kind of focus on what they need to do to shut down BYU and move on.
UCF 17-14. Let's say they lose tomorrow. What's your best bet? They can get into the NIT? Is that okay if I say that?
Yeah. I think the NIT is pretty much where they're locked into right now. You know, I think a win today was big for them. I think it helped them, you know, again, kind of strengthen that position. The NIT's got a new rule now where it takes two automatic bids, you know, from conferences like the Big 12 and the ACC and stuff like that. So UCF follows that based on their net NCAA net rankings. So UCF kind of follows into that mold. And so they should be able to get into the NIT. You know, now, if they could get a stretch of wins going here now, they beat BYU, let's say, and then they could beat Texas Tech maybe in the quarterfinals, you know, all of a sudden things change a little bit. Maybe you can make a push for the NCAA. Maybe you could be one of those hot teams. I just think right now, based on all that, what they'd have to do, I think the NIT is pretty much a lock for them and maybe get an opportunity to host a game in Orlando before they move on.
We're here with Matt Mershell, Orlando Sentinel. You've covered this team all season. 17-14, you got wins against Kansas, Texas, now Oklahoma State. Was this a successful first year with low expectations for this basketball team?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I know some people will argue, well, you know, we finished, you know, the team finished, you know, in the bottom half of the Big 12. But, you know, I mean, they were picked to finish dead last. And, you know, they come in, they find a way to win seven games in the regular season. They get seven regular Big 12 games during the regular season. They win the first round of the Big 12 tournament. You know, for them to move on, you know, to be where they're at, I think it's been a very successful season. Now, would they have liked to have gotten better? Yeah, for sure. Johnny talked about that yesterday, that, you know, there were games that they were in that they felt like they could have had an opportunity to win, you know, to flip the script a little bit, especially at the end of games. They kind of struggled at times in the last couple of minutes. So, you know, they feel like they could be a lot better off, you know, record-wise. But to be where they're at right now and to get into the second round and to showcase themselves, I think it was huge for them. And I think, obviously, getting those wins, you know, against ranked teams like Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech, you know, I think that brings the brand up. And I think a lot of people now know UCF basketball. And it's going to help with recruiting. It's going to help with fundraising. It's going to help with the NIL. All that, I think, kind of pays off when they have a good season in basketball.
What are expectations then for next season?
Oh, that's a hard one. I mean, you know, it's obviously going to be to get better, you know. But I think what you're going to have to realize is that, you know, they're going to go through a transition on the roster again. You know, they lose five guys. You know, they're going to end up losing, you know, Shamari Allen, C.J. Walker. Maybe he's a fifth-year guy. He could come back with a medical redshirt. Ibrahima Diallo's gone. Omar Payne's gone. I mean, they're going to have to either bring in some more transfers or also go through the recruiting. And they've got a really strong recruiting class. And they've got probably one of the best recruiting classes that Johnny's had since he's been at UCF. So there's an opportunity there for them to build from the ground up. But as we know in college basketball now, really it's through the transfer market and through the NIL that you can get some of the top players and maybe make a strong push in the Big 12.
You see that with Florida with Todd Golden, where transfer portal really helped them this year and get them to the tournament. My thing for you is I don't want them to just go to the NIT every year. And I get it. It's not a program that has a rich tradition, tradition of winning big games, but I don't want to just keep going to the NIT. Is that okay if I feel that way?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think you'd want to see it. I mean, I think that's the program's goal is to get to the NCAA tournament. You know, I think one thing I didn't mention that you got to remember too also is there's new teams coming in next year. Arizona comes in. Arizona's got a really good basketball program. Arizona State's coming in. You know, Colorado's been kind of okay and Utah's been okay. But, you know, you've got some other programs coming in. You lose Oklahoma, Texas, but you gain those other schools. So I think for UCF, I mean, yeah, you don't just want to go NIT. I think you'd love to go to the NCAA tournament if you can get yourself in there. I think being in the Big 12 offers them the opportunity to do that. Think about this, Mark. The Big 12 is going to get 9 teams most likely into the NCAA tournament this year. That's the most of any conference. So if you're a member of that conference, you're going to have an opportunity maybe if you can have a strong season to find yourself in the NCAA tournament. And I mean, and as with the American, maybe you could have got the winner and then, you know, maybe another at-large team, but it was very difficult. So I think, you know, for them, it's, you know, to being in the Big 12, to have opportunities to play these type of games. I mean, I was at a lot of these home games where against ranked teams where it was sold out, you know, and it was what an environment. And I've talked to people who thought they would never see the day where you'd go basically game after game and be sellout after sellout and you're playing ranked teams. I mean, that's just something that wasn't, you know, kind of thought of, but now it is. And I think that's something they're looking forward to.
You're absolutely right. All right, so let's reset. They got BYU tomorrow. What is it, 12:30 with the tip-off?
Yes.
Okay, so we got that. You're going to have full coverage. You got to follow this guy on Twitter as well. Just search for Matt Mershell. Let's go to football. I know they started spring practice yesterday. What type of access did you get yesterday for the first day?
Well, we got extended access, which is something we've been kind of working with the program. We got about 45 minutes to watch the end of practice, which is a little unusual. It used to be we would get the first 15 minutes, which was basically stretching and getting the players getting warmed up to go out and practice, and that was about it. But we actually got about 45 minutes to watch the end of practice, which was good. We got a little 7-on-7 action. We got to see KJ Jefferson, new quarterback, you know, make some plays. We saw some of the starters that will probably be guys who will end up getting starts this year, second teamers and third teamers that maybe were names that people aren't going to be too familiar with but are maybe going to make their push. You know, some freshmen were out there making some big plays as well. So it was an opportunity to kind of see that. And then afterwards, we got extended access media availability with players. We got Gus to talk about, you know, the first practice. We got KJ Jefferson. We got RJ Harvey, who, by the way, I tell everyone, go on Twitter and look at the picture of RJ Harvey now. This guy has bulked up and looks like a machine. And I think it's going to be good news for them going into next season. He had 1,400 yards this season. I think he looks like a guy who's really going to come out and try to play harder and do more this year. We got Kobe Hudson, and then we got Ricky Barber. So it was a lot of guys that we've had in the past, but guys are very excited to be getting ready for another season.
Was it weird that John Rhys Plumlee was not out there?
No, it sort of was. It was weird because I don't have to. I talked to John Rhys Plumlee a couple of weeks ago. He's in Dallas working out, getting ready for the NFL draft, you know. And so I had asked him about his relationship with KJ Jefferson because they're both from Mississippi. And John Rhys told me that the two of them talked before KJ committed to transfer to UCF. So he said, I waited a good discussion about it. And so I asked KJ yesterday, like, what was that like? And he said, you know, well, we were roommates, you know, at an all-star game in Mississippi. And so we had a week to spend together. They never faced off against each other. But they both kind of realized that, you know, there's some opportunities that UCF could provide. And John Rhys was able to kind of explain some of those things. And KJ really kind of gravitated towards that. And he gravitated towards the idea of being coached by Gus. So it was kind of a connection there with John Rhys Plumlee, even though he wasn't there in person.
What's Jefferson like in person?
He's big. Big dude. He's about, what is he? I think he's, you know, you think about, you know, your his size. You're talking about a guy who's like 6'3". He's about 247, I think they list him at. But, you know, his you know, one of the things he told me was, you know, one of the players that he really likes to emulate was, you know, Cam Newton. It's one of the reasons why he chose kind of UCF and to play under Gus Malzahn, because that connection. And he told me, you know, his phone, when you look under YouTube on his app, it's just nothing but Cam Newton videos. And so, I mean, he wants to kind of have that type of success that Cam Newton has. He believes he can, he's got the physique to get out there and play in that kind of, you know, system. And so, I mean, that's got to be some good news for UCF fans. I mean, the idea that if they can recapture, rekindle that, you know, kind of that what Gus had with Cam Newton with KJ, I think there could be some big things happening there.
Okay, what's the identity of the offense? Even though you've only seen one practice of spring ball, what's the identity then moving forward?
Well, I think the identity of the offense is very similar to what they did last year. I mean, I think they're going to run the ball a little bit more. You know, I think obviously when you have a guy like R.J. Harvey coming off a big year, 1,400 yards, you know, you're not going to get away from that. You're going to run the ball a lot. And I think with KJ, you know, they're still going to have opportunities to throw the ball deep. You've got Kobe Hudson. You've got some very talented, you know, wide receivers on this team. So I think they're going to try to take advantage of that. But I think they're going to run – they're going to run the quarterback a little bit more than they did with you know, Plumlee. I think you're going to see KJ get opportunities to do that. I think they want to establish the run. I think defensively, I think this team wants to stop the run. That was the thing they harped on all the offseason, and what they harped on the first day is we've got to stop the run. If they can stop the run and their defense plays better, they feel like they've got a chance to win games that they were in like they were last year. So the identity of this team is going to be tougher. You know, they got a new strength and conditioning coach. They believe that they're going to be able to finish games now. They're going to be bigger, stronger, better. So they're going to look to prove it.
Okay, I want to clarify this here with Matt Michelle. Is Gus Malzahn calling the offense again this year?
Yes, Gus is back calling the offense. Gus has said he is going to take over play calling. He actually told us that he sort of did it, not on the fly, but middle of last season. When they went in the middle of their five-game losing streak, he said he got back in the calling some of the most of the offensive plays. He acted like we should be surprised by that. Most of us weren't. We kind of had a funny feeling he was doing that. But in the offseason, he said he's going to call the plays. He did bring in a new offensive coordinator in Tim Harris Jr., a guy that coached under Gus 2 years ago at UCF, was running backs coach, and then left to go to Miami and has come back. So Tim Harris Jr. is going to kind of help them a little bit with some of the play calling. Darren Henshaw, who was the offensive coordinator last year, is co-offensive coordinator this year. He's going to help out with the passing game and the quarterback. So in Gus's mind, it's going to be kind of a collaborative effort. But in the end, it's all going to come down to Gus calling the play.
Okay, who's calling the defense then?
Ted Roof is the new defensive coordinator. He comes in from Oklahoma. His kind of forte is run defenses. He's had some of the best run defenses in the country the last couple of years. They brought him in. He worked with Gus at Auburn many years ago. Pretty much anyone who's at UCF has worked with Gus at some point in his career. That's the way Gus likes to work. So Ted Roof is brought in. He's going to kind of take over the defensive calling duties. Addison Williams shifts over to a co-defensive role, and he's going to be calling a lot of the secondary and you know, that kind of defense. And then Roof's going to also be calling linebackers, being the linebackers coach. So a little shifting here and there, but it's, you know, Gus feels like these moves will kind of help the team in the long run, especially going into the league like the Big 12, where you need guys to take over and be able to find ways to get your players coached up.
Are you going out there every day for practice? Because I know they're going to be doing this till what, like April 12th for the spring game? What's going to happen?
Well, they basically practice this week. It's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so I'll be at practice those 3 days. Then they take a week off. They got spring break.
Oh,
and then they come back, and then they'll do the same sort of schedule. And it's about 15 practices. I think it's 14 or 15 practices. And I'll try to be out as many as I can. I mean, I'm obviously getting more access is great for us because we get a chance to see things. And, you know, getting more player access is something we pushed really hard for. The media pushed this offseason. So we're going to try to do as much as we can and try to get as many stories as we can.
Do you like the Friday night spring game?
Yeah, I mean, I like Friday night football games, you know, college football games. I mean, I know fans hate them, you know, because it's a midweek. It could be in the middle of the week. It's not a Saturday game, but to be honest with you, you're the only game on. I mean, think about this for spring games. There are about maybe 20 to 30 spring games going on April 13th, which is that Saturday. So for Gus to have Friday as really the only one out there, I mean, that's an opportunity to kind of come in and bring recruits in, have them be just ready to watch you. You get fans there. as well, and it kind of really kind of gives you an opportunity to be the one and only show. It's the same thing during the season. I mean, there'll be a handful of games on a Friday night, but if you're one of the main games, I mean, that's you. That's what everyone's talking about, you know. And then Saturday gives you an extra day for rest.
Before I let you go, we've not talked in a while. What are your thoughts on they want to go to a 14-team playoff, even though we've not done the 12-team playoff, but that might come here. And they're throwing out, Big Ten and SEC, they want qualifiers as well. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem with expanding the playoff. I mean, we're talking about 2026. You know, the next 2 years are going to be 12-team playoff. That's already been decided. But I think at some point expansion was going to happen because the more teams means more money. Now, when it comes to all that qualifiers, I think that's going to be a point of a lot of kind of discussion over the next couple of weeks, because I don't necessarily believe that, you know, the ACC and Big 12 want to see the Big 10 and SEC get more advantages. You know, if you're going to give those two conferences, you know, an extra team apiece of a qualifier, like say three apiece, that's just, it's not fair. So I think there's going to be a lot of discussion on that. I mean, I think automatic qualifiers are things that are going to happen. You know, I think the conferences want to make sure they got their teams in there. So they're going to fight for it. But, you know, I think the bigger picture, which is something that can be decided by the end of this week, is the amount of revenue that's going to be shared and how it's going to be shared in the new playoff. I mean, Big Ten and SEC want a bigger piece of the pie. They believe they should get it. They're already about $300 million more over ACC and Big 12 right now when it comes to revenue. So they feel like they should get more. And I think those other conferences are going to fight to try to get their big piece as well, because they don't want to fall farther and farther behind.
Do you feel like the SEC and the Big Ten are just going to be like, look, we're just going to break away after a while? It's all about us and forget everyone else.
I think it could happen. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen because of the playoff system. I think it could happen more because of NIL and transfer portal and things like that. I think, you know, if you're the SEC and the Big Ten and you're looking around and you want to see how things, you want things done a certain way, and you're not willing to sit around and wait for, you know, like a lot of the conferences are right now, which is to go to the federal government and say, hey, you need to step in and fix the problem. You know, maybe then you break away and you form your own division. And then what you do is you say, okay, we're going to be in charge of our own, how we handle NIL, how our schools handle NIL, how they handle the transfer portal. We're going to sit down and handle these kind of issues. And that could be the big point, the tipping point. I mean, listen, I've been on radio shows the last, you know, couple of weeks and talking about, you know, in the next 10 years, the model of college athletics is going to change dramatically. And you're even talking about the point of possibly being employees, where athletes are employees of the school. And there's going to have to be collective bargaining, just like it is with the NFL and all the other professional leagues. So, I mean, this is just kind of where we're headed, and it's a disappointing, and it can be frustrating for a lot of people, but, I mean, that's the reason why a lot of what we're talking about is so important for a lot of these schools.
When I look at the NFL draft, and I'll let you go, I look at Caleb Williams, where he could be the first pick in the draft. I feel like he's that poster boy, like NIL, and he made millions of dollars in college. Don't you feel like that's going to be the norm moving forward when you look at the NFL draft?
Well, yes and no. I think the thing that, and Nick Saban kind of talked a little bit about this today, and he was speaking in front of the government, is this idea that I think you get a lot of athletes who are going to stick around in college because it's more financially beneficial for them to stay in college. I mean, I think that's going to be the case in basketball. I think it's going to be the case in a lot of sports because, you know, you're an NFL player, and let's say you don't believe you're going to get a great deal, or you don't want to be drafted, let's say, as there's been discussion, and let's say you don't want to be drafted by a certain team, maybe you decide to stay around for another year if you have eligibility, and you make $2 million or whatever it is, and you're satisfied with that for that moment, you know, because you know that at some point you can, you know, that'll help take care of you for a while, and then you go and play another season, and then go play in the professional league. So I think you're going to see that a lot with the NFL, with the NBA. I think a lot of these basketball players are willing to stay now because they're getting paid. And they're thinking, why do I want to go to the NBA? I can stay at school and make just as much money and not have to worry about it. You make more money as a college player now in some cases than you do in the G League. So why go and get drafted by a team and spend, you know, 2 or 3 years in the G League when you could be making more money as a college? So I think that's kind of where we're at in something.
If Tim Tebow was at Florida with NIL, just forget it.
I mean, there's guys that I'm sure who are like Tebow and guys who were maybe a decade out of what went before NIL happened around that have to be thinking, man, if I was in school now, think about what you could have done. I mean, Reggie Bush, who's been fighting to get his Heisman back. You know, Reggie Bush is you know, what he got his Heisman taken away from is basically NIL right now.
Johnny Football at Texas A&M. He's the one who's crying. He would have had a good time. All right, what can we check out for spring practice for UCF, buddy?
Yeah, I got a couple features coming up. As I mentioned, I spoke to KJ Jefferson, got a feature coming up on him in a couple days. I spoke to the new strength and conditioning coach, Anthony Kinsey at UCF. He's got an interesting story, young man who played under Gus at Arkansas State and is kind of the guy who's trying to resurrect the strength program and get it ready to go. And then a couple stories here and there that are kind of I'm keeping under the wraps because I don't want to surprise.
No worries. No worries, man. His name is Matt Michelle Orlando Sentinel. My man, thanks for your help and have a great day.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mark. Take care.
All right. Good stuff.